or all that are here, as Anne said, maybe a number of people have decided that this is a good duvet day, which I thought was a lovely expression, and I do notice that most of you have come far more wrapped up than you were yesterday. But according to Hans, as the chairman of the board, it is officially warm in here today. So I think that we should, lots of little heaters around, they've certainly made an effort to try to keep us warm, so hopefully we will stay warm all day today. One other announcement that I have to make, which I'm very sad to make, which is that England have just beaten the Black Caps at cricket in the second ODI. So it is now 1-1. And the third announcement that I have to make is that I am very pleased to report that there has been quite a lot of LinkedIn, as much as anything else, activity overnight. So congratulations to those who have invited and joined with others in this group or have reposted or retweeted on Twitter the number of things that we have. Unfortunately, Mark can't be here at 8:30 this morning. He attempted to ride his motorbike to work and decided that it was too dangerous, so he's now decided he's taking the kids to work, to school, and then coming in on the train, so he'll be here about 10. So he will not, however, I have asked for a IFRS Advisory Council group to be set up in LinkedIn. So for those of you that aren't in LinkedIn, you might want to consider it just for that. However, it will be available, or I'm not sure how you can access it from others, but we can. And we'll certainly post as much information. And for the first time tomorrow, or after this these meetings, I'm going to be doing a podcast like the board Hans does for the board meetings with Christina and Matt, and we will certainly post that. Not that you would probably want to watch me again. We'll post that to that group as well. But I'm not sure how, to be honest, I have no idea how to set it up, so I'm relying on Christina to get that set up. So those are the announcements before we start this morning, and I trust that you did have a good night's sleep and that you weren't too shocked to see snow on the ground when you woke up this morning, unlike me who got up, decided I would go set the alarm because I was going for a run this morning because to hell with the cold, but when I went, that's snow, I decided that it was probably safer not to go for a run, so I didn't. Anyway, which means I'm full of energy because I haven't got rid of it on my run. However, we will now lead into the first topic of the day, so our third substantive breakout group. So it's the first time we've had three lots of ability to talk in smaller groups on things. And this one is following on the same theme as yesterday in terms of our strategic topics for the foundation and potentially impacting on the way that it operates in some of those key areas. So today's topics, and particularly the first one in terms of engagement with academics, is on that first theme, that same theme. So it really is for us, and Anne McGeechan is going to take us through some background information, an opportunity for us to consider what the appropriate academic liaison for the strategy for the foundation might be. And I'd like to encourage you, like we did for the two topics yesterday, in terms of thinking, and I'm going to use this expression, sacred cows. There are some things that we've done and we've used an awful lot in the past. That doesn't mean we have to do it the same way in the future. This is an opportunity to think about how we do those things. So it is us providing advice. It doesn't mean they have to take it. To develop the strategy. So where we are at now, the paper obviously sets out some of the key objectives, and Anne's going to take us through that. And really, I'm going to say, Anne, the floor is yours at this point.
Yeah. Yes, so thank you. In this session, we want to get your advice on how best to engage with academics in the most effective and efficient way. that didn't work. What do I do?
Whoops.
And deliberately moved so she was nearer the screen.
Okay, I might be need to be a little nearer to the screen. Okay, well, we'll see if it works next time I press the button. So I'm going to start by going through some background information that sets out why the ISB needs evidence, needs research that provides evidence, and also talks a bit specifically about why academic research has advantages over other sorts of research, but also has particular difficulties, obstacles in terms of us using it well. I'm then going to move on to a draft strategy and activities for academic engagement. I took on the role of academic liaison when I came back to the ISB, having had a few years in academia. And there was a set of activities that we do, and they are, you know, they are enjoyable and interesting. But some of them we don't actually do very well because we don't have the time. There are also things that we don't do at the moment, which other organizations so similar to us, other standard setters, or EFRAG, for example, they do things that we don't do at the moment. If we wanted to do those things, that would require even more time. And so we thought it would be sensible to develop a strategy so that we had a coherent approach to knowing what we want to get out of our engagement with academics, and what activities would best support that strategy. And we're in the process of doing that, and that's why your advice at this point would be particularly valuable for us. Having looked at sort of a potential draft strategy and activities that we do at the moment and some that we potentially could do in the future, I want to briefly touch on resources, because obviously, without any resource constraint, we could do everything, and that would be great, but we can't. And then we're going to go into breakout groups for you to discuss what you've heard and give us your feedback and your advice. And then later in the morning, there'll be a feedback session from the groups all together, which Joanna's going to chair. So, no? Could you just move on to the next slide? And the next one. Thank you. So first, a bit of context. Our due process handbook says that generally we should do research before we start a standard setting project. And we indeed have a research program where we look at problems that are arising in practice, and we research actually whether there is a financial reporting problem and whether it's a problem that there's something that we could effectively do something about as a standard setter. The due process handbook also says that the ISB and the technical staff aren't expected to undertake all the activities on its research program, and that it's important that we involve others in that work. And one of the others that it mentions are academics. So the due process handbook clearly envisages that we will be reaching out to academics and using the work that they do to inform us about projects that we might want to take on. Additionally, in the agenda consultation in 2015, there was a lot of support for our increased focus on evidence-based standard setting, so gathering evidence, doing research. And we committed to an evidence-based approach to standard setting. So that's the context in which we are thinking about getting research and engaging with academics.
Connor, can you help me with this?
Okay. Okay, so we're clear that we need evidence. And in fact, we need evidence to support our standard setting work at different stages of any project. So we need evidence to begin with to identify what financial reporting project problems there are, the scale of those problems. Is it coming up with differences, both in terms of the way that people account for these things, the report these things, also in the way that they measure them? Are we getting wide variety in measurement? Is there a lot of estimation error potentially in the numbers that are being reported? Then once we've identified a problem, we need research and evidence to help assess solutions. And this evidence can come from a wide variety of sources using a wide variety of methodologies. So surveys, experiments, field work. Information from all these sorts of things helps inform us for what we should be doing. And then finally, after we've issued a standard, we need evidence about implementation problems. Is the standard working as it should be, or are there things that are preventing it from working the way we thought it should? And we have post-implementation reviews, which is one of the areas where we do, in fact, directly access academic research to help us. So in terms of where do we get the evidence from, some of it we initiate ourselves. We do field work. We look at financial statements. We try and model, and model in a sort of vague, a broad sense rather than the specific sense that academics might describe as modelling. You know, we try and work out what the results of our proposals will be. We also use research from independent sources. And that's not just academics, that's also other standard setters, accountancy bodies, accountancy firms, preparers, regulators. Anybody who produces information that's relevant for us, you know, we're going to use. In terms of academics, the material that we can use there is that there's a large body of existing literature. We can commission new research if we want. We have done that very rarely, but maybe it's something we ought to be thinking about doing more of. And we can try and just generally encourage academics to do research that is useful to us. But there are some difficulties in doing that, and I'll come back to those later. So in terms of using research, the first two bullet points on this slide explain, you know, the good things, the benefits we get out of using evidence, doing evidence-based standard setting. I mean, we make better decisions, so you get better standards. And we're also better able to defend the decisions that we've made. It makes us a more credible body, and we've got much greater chance of persuading people to use our standards, even if the answer we come up with isn't one that they personally would agree with. If we can demonstrate that it's built on a sound body of evidence, they're much more likely to say, oh, well, you know, it wouldn't have been what we wanted, but we can see why you got there, and we're gonna accept it, and we're not going to fight it. So from our point of view, having a strong evidence base is essential. The other bullet points really focus on why there are specific benefits from getting research from academics. Academics can access a broader range of perspectives, and they come at things from a slightly different angle. They don't have the same direct sort of vested interest in the output as some of our other stakeholders do. I mean, they are more neutral observers in the main. I mean, obviously, there are always exceptions, but broadly, you would expect them to be neutral in the way that they assess our work. They are trained collectors and analyzers of evidence. That's what they do. That's what academic researchers do. So they have huge expertise in gathering data and analyzing it. And we ought to tap into that. It would seem crazy not to. They're also, it's their job. They're funded to do research. that, you know, the universities pay them and then they go and research things. And if we can manage to align their interests in research in the sorts of things that we are interested in, then again, this is a great resource that we should take advantage of. Helping us to align, to achieve that alignment of interest. At the moment, we are fortunate that academics are increasingly being required to show the impact of their research. In many jurisdictions around the world where academics, if they're funded through public funds, regulators like to see that something that they're doing is flowing back into some sort of public good. And so there's an increased emphasis on the impact of the research that academics do. What impact will that actually have on regulation or policy making? And that's great from our point of view, because it means that if academics can demonstrate that they are involved with us and producing research that we are looking at, then that's good for them as well. So there are a lot of benefits, but there are also problems, specific problems for us in using academic research. Now, the first is timeliness, and I feel very embarrassed, you know, as a standard setter to say that other people don't do their work very quickly. You know, it's a bit awkward. Sometimes we are not the speediest people ourselves, but academics, you know, they have to take time to develop their ideas, and then they have to gather the evidence and write up a paper. And that does take a long time. There is a very long lead time from having the first idea of research to actually getting a final product of results written up in a paper that analyzes them and comes to whatever conclusion they come to. So managing to get academics interested in topics that we're interested in time for those results to be useful to us is difficult. There's also a huge academic literature, and academic accountants look at many, many different things, only a small proportion of which is even slightly relevant to what we do. And then individual papers will only provide, generally, a very narrow, marginal contribution. So for us to get the most out of, for us to get any real sense of what academic research is telling us, we need literature reviews that do an overview of a wide number of papers. Because if we look at any one paper, that's not going to tell us very much. It's particularly not going to tell us very much because academic papers are very difficult for non-academics to read. They just are. It is very hard for us without that academic background and training to identify papers that might be relevant and then to actually understand what it is those papers are saying. And I know the academics in the room will agree with this, that it's hard work for us because we don't have, I mean, we don't have, you know, years and years of training in this area, so why would we expect it to be easy? We also need to understand that the limitations of the research methodologies they use. And at that point, you're really into almost the hardest bits of the paper to understand. Exactly what have they done, especially with the sort of statistical, empirical work that they do. Understanding that methodology well enough to spot if there's something about it that means that the results, whatever they are, might not prove to be that useful to us because there's something about the methodology that sets it up in the wrong way, that means it's just not going to give us information that works. But getting to that point of being able to understand that is very, very hard and takes a long time. So we have difficulties in accessing the right sort of academic literature, and we really need interpretation of it for it to be useful for us. We can't generally just pick up a paper and say, oh, look, this shows this, this is really relevant, this is what we need. It just doesn't work that way. So those are big obstacles. Pitfalls that we need to avoid. Well, the biggest is that because of all the difficulties in using academic literature, so the biggest pitfall is that we just ignore stuff that actually would be really useful, really relevant, and could inform our work a lot. So, I mean, my feeling is that despite the obstacles to using it, it would be a bad thing if we didn't. So that's the biggest pitfall. But then against that, we have to make sure that we don't misinterpret the evidence. We are, you know, we're all guilty of finding papers that support our view more interesting than the ones that don't support our view. I mean, clearly those ones are, you know, they're not very good papers, are they? Whereas the ones that support our view must be well-founded and interesting. So we have to be careful that we're not biased in how we read these papers. We also, academic papers are difficult to understand, but then if they're not in English, then most of the staff are not going to be able to read them at all. I mean, we need papers written in English, or we need a summary of papers that aren't written in English, you know, provided for us. So accessing non-English papers is also very difficult for us. However, despite all that, we have had some really successful examples of where we've used academic literature. So the post-implementation reviews, we actually ask for a literature review on the standard that we are looking at. And so we have done three of those so far, and the literature reviews have been excellent and have really helped in informing us about whether the standard is working in the way that we hoped it would. We also have a paper that Anne Tarker developed. She was at that point, she was an education fellow at the IASB. And so when the SEC put out a paper on whether, you know, IFRSs should be used in the US, the SEC staff put out a paper, and we were able to issue a response based on a literature review that Anne did on the case for global accounting standards. So that was also a very good example of where we've used academic literature in a valuable way. So, having looked at the background, what are we actually doing in terms of strategy? We've been trying to develop a strategy that will help us focus our efforts in the areas that are most useful for us. And we're doing that in the context of the IFRS Foundation's strategic goals. So looking at those, the first strategic goal is basically that we develop high-quality standards. And I think for this goal, it's sort of clear how academic engagement feeds in. It seems clear that using relevant academic research is essential, really, as part of developing standards, high-quality standards. I think it's arguable that it's just not credible for a standard setter, you know, a legitimate standard setter, not to be looking at academic research to support the work that it does. It just sounds crazy. So to some extent, I feel like this is a given. We have to do some of this. But there are also other strategic goals where I think academic liaison could play an important role. I don't want to focus on education initiatives in this session. So the education strategy is being developed, and they're doing all sorts of wonderful things, I'm sure, and we don't want to talk about it here. What I do want to think a bit about is the role of academics in encouraging the global adoption of IFRSs. It seems to me that if we engage with academics so that they know what we're doing, that we're interested in what they know, and that we're serious about getting evidence and building standards based on a solid theoretical foundation, you know, that we're doing serious work and we know how it fits together conceptually and theoretically, then you would hope that academics would be our friends and could be a very powerful and influential voice in supporting IFRS, ranging from all sorts of things. Firstly, through to if they teach IFRS, teaching it in a way that sounds enthusiastic. You know, these are good standards. This is developing high-quality financial reporting rather than, well, this is a useless standard produced by a body that clearly knows nothing about real accounting and it's just a list of arbitrary rules and poor you for having to learn it. You know, the sort of tone in which they communicate our standards to people starting their accounting career could be powerful. Also, if you think about if a letter appears in the newspaper, like the Financial Times, for example, and it's signed off Professor whatever, people who aren't experts in that area will assume that the professor is an expert in that area, rightly or wrongly. That label, you know, carries a lot of weight. So if we can get academics to be supportive of what we do, to think we are a good standard setter, then that is much better than having them as critics, because their voice will be heard and will be perceived to be knowledgeable and powerful. So in terms of our, you know, our strategic goals, I think sort of global adoption of IFRS, where they, you know, support us as a standard setter, they support us as being a good standard setter, is important. We also have a final strategic goal, which is organisational excellence and best practice, which it's a good thing Mark's not here, because I was going to say it sounds a bit like motherhood and apple pie, and I'm sure we'd do it all. And anyway, that involves communicating what we do, and we would, of course, want to communicate what we do. So I don't really have a lot to say about that one. So then in terms of what are we doing? What do we do so far? In some ways, our sort of flagship thing in Academic Liaison is our annual research forum, which we run jointly with a high-quality journal. And the point about doing that is that, although, as I said earlier, impact is becoming a bigger thing in the academic world, what really matters to academics is getting papers published in high-quality journals. That's what will enhance their career and their reputation, and that's what they want to do. And we are a bit of a sideline. Any engagement with us is a bit of a sideline for academics. They want top quality publications. So if we join up with a high quality journal and provide them that route of getting a paper published, that makes doing that very attractive to academics. So that's how we run these research forums. We then get a mixed audience of non-academics and academics, because we want to promote dialogue between the two groups. And we, you know, we look at papers that the journal puts out a call for papers, but emphasizes the papers have to be of interest to us. So, you know, so far we have done quite well in getting high, you know, good papers on topics of relevance to us, which we talk about at this event. And we've done, five so far, and they've been successful. They've been really good days where people have come away saying, "This was interesting. I can see why this is a good thing for you to do." So that they've been going well. The Research Centre website, we have on our website, we have a section dedicated to academics. It's particularly dedicated to academic researchers. It's called the Research Centre website. It is not, I would claim, an amazing website at the moment, because we don't have time to put the resources in. There's lots of things that I can think of that we could do if we had more resource, or if we devoted more resource to that. So, to be honest, it feels a bit neglected at the moment, I would say. neglected by me, I mean, more than anybody else. But we have a research program. KPMG very generously give the IAAER. The IAAER is an international organization of academic accountants with an interest in research and education. And they do have a sort of focus of policy-relevant research. So KPMG give them money that funds research of interest to us. And we, the people, the authors that they are sponsoring, come and talk to us about the papers they're writing. And again, the feedback that I get from those days, they come to our to the board room, and the board, some board members come and talk to them, and staff come and talk to them, is that they really appreciate that input. And the board members come away saying things that are very positive as well, that was interesting, that it gave them a perspective they hadn't had before. So again, that does seem to generate valuable output. We are, with some academic organisations, some of us are involved in sort of advisory roles on advisory boards or on executive committees of various sorts. And we also attend some of the main academic conferences and participate in some sessions, and sometimes we run workshops. One of the things that sort of sparked the need to develop a strategy is that bit was all a bit ad hoc. People were going to academic conferences because they had an invitation to go to an academic conference, and there wasn't really a strategy of which ones we should be attending and which ones maybe weren't worth going to, or we didn't have the time to go to. So it's been in the past, you know, I've been to all sorts of academic conferences, but I would be hard put to say why I went to some and not to others. And then finally, we put out calls for academic literature reviews or specific research. So the examples I talked about earlier, there is a feeling that we could do a lot more of that, and that might be really helpful for us, but we're not sure, and we're not sure how much time to invest in that. So we would appreciate your input on that. And then there are other things that we could do that we don't do. But when the Research Centre was set up on the website, we promised that we would do a newsletter twice a year. That was, I think, over 4 years ago, and there's been one newsletter. So we haven't quite kept up. But, you know, if we thought that was an important thing to do, we could make it more of a priority, which would mean that it would get done rather than not getting done. Some national standard setters, and EFRAG as well, have an academic advisory group. We don't at the moment, and we wonder whether we should, because other bodies do, but we get mixed views on how useful those other bodies find these groups. So we're sort of waiting to see, we're monitoring what goes on with other organisations. Again, if we set up an advisory group, an academic advisory group, it does take a lot of resource to run one well and use it efficiently. I mean, I'm sure you appreciate like how much work April and people put into getting this group working. It's not a small thing to take on. One thing that I must say I'm particularly keen on the idea of is that we get an academic fellow in, someone with academic expertise who would be devoted solely to doing academic liaison activities for us in the organisation. But then it's a question of resource. Is that better than getting another, you know, technical manager or whatever? I'm keen on it because I think this is really a really interesting area that we could develop more, but I do understand that, you know, you have to balance everything against everything else. And then finally, should we be putting out more frequent calls for academic literature reviews on areas of interest? Should we be doing this for every project at the beginning of every project? I mean, at the moment, the staff do look at academic literature, but it's potentially a bit ad hoc, and it certainly isn't documented in a sort of systematic manner. You know, we can't easily produce a list of academic papers that we have looked at on each project. And if we were a bit more if we were a bit more systematic about what we did, but I actually got, you know, genuine academics with the expertise to do the work to tell us what the important papers are and what they're saying, then that could be very valuable. Right, and then finally, just sort of touching on resources and resource options. I mean, clearly the big thing is that there's a trade-off between the resources that we devote to engagement with academics and the resources we devote to engagement with other stakeholder groups. For example, investors, preparers, regulators, and auditors. And, you know, however important and interesting I think engaging with academics is, you know, you can't argue that, you know, engaging with investors is, you know, clearly a very high priority, and we've only got limited resources, so how much time and resource do we spend on what? Currently, we have some board members with an academic background, actually more than ever before, which is great, and their expertise is much valued. And we have other board members who have got a really strong interest in academic research. But of course, board members are board members. They have a lot to do. They, you know, the academic board members, we can't expect them to spend all their time reading academic papers in order to tell the staff what the thinking on everything in academia is, because they actually have to do all the other things that board members have to do, which is considerable. Staff members, we have a few with an academic background or a strong interest in academic resources, but really very little academic research expertise on the staff. Which means that if we spend time getting into the academic literature, that takes us a long time. It takes me a long time to understand an academic paper, whereas somebody with more academic expertise could do it faster. So could we get potential future resources, people with a bit more academic expertise? But if they have this academic expertise and this academic focus, it takes away resources from other areas. And then just sort of finally to note, though, if we're going to get the most benefit we can out of liaising with academics, we do need to develop a strategy that's effective, and we need to allocate appropriate resources to back up that strategy. So, over to you. In your groups, if you could think about, have we, thinking about the IFRS Foundation strategic goals, which is sort of what we're meant to be supporting, and also thinking about the fact that we've got limited resources, so, you know, we have to balance everything. Have we identified the right objectives for academic liaison? And how important are they? And then which activities are most useful for achieving those objectives? And are there things we've just missed completely that you can think of in terms of liaising with academics that would be good? And if you could just sort of at least touch on what resources you think would be the... How can we most effectively and efficiently do this? I have got handouts, which I hope... Matt is saying he's got the handouts. Well... Oh, brilliant. Thank you. There are handouts that sort of give you tables that you can insert bits of information into to just help structure the answers. So that is all I want to say, and I very much look forward to your input. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anne. I think that is a superb background. background, and you have been upfront and honest with us, both in terms of our strengths and weaknesses and the academic information strengths and weaknesses and your own personal strengths and weaknesses. So thank you. And it is obviously a significant issue in relation to the Foundation's strategic goals. And I'm sitting here thinking, I hope that we can really have some input into this because it is important. And I think it's all of us on a snowy, wintry morning to use our brains as much as we can and share information to try to get there. To try to, at least to try to help me, I sort of cut to the chase, if you like, and try to set out in my own words the dilemma. And I think what I might do is try to summarise that before sending you away to think. And to me, it is a dilemma. And I'm definitely aware that there are different views within the Foundation, there are different views within the board in respect of the objectives and therefore the most effective strategy. So, you know, I won't say we're to be a circuit breaker, but I think that it is, you know, our thoughts really are relevant in this area. And when I thought about the problem and how Anna's described it, I went, the ISB needs to rely on research at various stages of its technical problem. There are various types of research. There's academic research and there's more general survey empirical type research. Basically, academic research is quite often difficult to understand for untrained people. And basically, the Foundation technical staff are untrained people in that respect of understanding academic literature. Academic research is not necessarily focused in the areas that technical staff need. Academics' main motivation for undertaking research is to get it published and recognised. That's one of the reasons they're academics, not necessarily to do research to help the ISB. So my concluding fact in relation to that is academic research is often not used for IFRS purposes without a lot of pain and cost. So that's a dilemma, and how do we think about we might solve it? The other fact pattern, if you like, in my own mind I had, for credibility reasons, the ISB needs research to support the conclusions in its standards. It's not credible not to use research. And academics can be critical and have a well-respected voice if they perceive that adequate research has not been undertaken. We've got to bear that in mind. This is one of the areas of dilemma, I think. In terms of stakeholders generally to the Foundation, there are some views that academics are not the Foundation's most important stakeholders. Investors, preparers, other users potentially of financial statements. Where do academics fit on that? So I think us potentially thinking a little bit about that. And so if they're not, right, the most important, they are not or should not be the primary focus from a benefit perspective. Is that an appropriate view? Anne has argued, or some of her slides are showing, that they may have a role as key stakeholders. In my mind, then, the question is, why do we want to liaise with academics? What actually is our objective or objectives? And can they or should they be considered separately? So should those objectives be considered completely separately, and there may be different plans? So my straw man for perhaps you to consider, but that's certainly not saying it should be an outcome, and to a certain extent I will acknowledge I have been led by Anne in terms of her saying in her view, her thoughts. So maybe, just maybe, from an effective use of resource, and if you truly did a business case on the basis that we want to have research that can be understood, or to have somebody who is able to identify requests, set up the right channels to get the right research done for our technical teams, so that they are not using their valuable time trying to understand some academic research and getting frustrated. Maybe, just maybe, the business case for getting somebody who is dedicated to that within the Foundation is the best use, most effective use of our resources. So that's my straw man, but to me, your role in your groups, please, is to think about what the solution to this dilemma may be. Anne's put some specific questions there. Have we identified the right objectives? Have we got the right activities? I'd encourage you to think slightly higher than the objectives and actually think about the higher level strategy around what we are trying to achieve and why we're trying to achieve it. We managed that, I think, yesterday with the two topics yesterday. And yes, we get down into the detail. We need to get down into the detail and understand, but try and bring it back up and say, why are we trying to do things to come up with an overall thought process in terms of a plan that can then be filled in? And I'm now going to say, good luck.